He drove all the way in the field to our tent, woke us around midnight, and he had no English, but he was basically trying to tell us, I have a place, I have a family, and you know, you can stay with me, you don't have to sleep outside.
Hey folks, welcome to the Adventure Sports Podcast. If you are listening from the United States, I hope you had a great 4th of July weekend, celebrated your freedom somehow. If you're listening in the UK, I don't know if y'all celebrate anything for 4th of July. It was kind of not a great day for y'all, I guess. But hey, at least we're like best friends now. Anyway, my name is Mason. This is the Adventure Sports Podcast. And yeah, we talk about adventures. And today's adventure actually has to do with a different country altogether, the country of Georgia. We're talking to a full-time adventurer, Alexandra Bilodeau Desbians. Full-time adventuring all around the world for the last 7 years. And what I love about that is you get to see so many places. You get to see the places that are really hyped up and the places that aren't. And so many people who see so much of the world, we hear it time and time again, some of their favorite experiences are the places off the beaten path, the places where, I hear this phrase a lot specifically, you don't have any expectations. Places where you weren't trying to build up in your head, or you weren't trying to, you know, get through in your head. It was just the places you didn't have anything to go off of. You just went. And oftentimes those places end up being our most memorable. I don't know. There's got to be something that can explain that. And maybe that's a good lesson to learn in life in general. But anyway, we're going to hear Alexander's story. Great conversation. And before we get started, I wanted to make you aware of one of our sponsors, Expedia, who has a show all about travel. So if you'd like to travel to Georgia yourself, which I'm absolutely interested now, especially after looking at some of the pictures that Alexander showed, they have a podcast to help keep you motivated called Out Travel the System. And it's in its third season. It basically has a central mission to inspire and inform you about travel, which can mean anything from building out your bucket list, how-tos, as well as, you know, being inspired through other people's stories about travel or how they travel more efficiently, better, and some of the places they've been. So it's meant to inspire you. It's meant to prepare you. It's meant to just get you ready to travel now that that part of our lives is opening up again in a large way. So if you don't mind, take a moment, pull out your podcast app after you listen to this show. Look for Out Travel the System, like and subscribe. It would really help me out. All right, let's get into the story. Here's the episode. Dear Alexander, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mason.
So I always ask this first, where are you coming from today?
So right now I'm in Montreal, Quebec, in Canada, currently studying to be a mountain guide.
Oh, that's really cool. Now, did you grow up there? Is that home for you? And if not, where is?
Yeah, I grew up in Sherbrooke, which is just about an hour and a half from here, but close to Vermont, really close to the border.
So what did you grow up doing there? Because you sent me this email with just all the different sports you're into, all the things you've done around the world. And was that like was your family like that, or did you have to do it on your own?
Well, that's a good question, because it just kind of happened. I mean, my mom has always been doing a lot of outdoor activities and taking me along kayaking, hiking, cycling, canoeing. I got into rock climbing. So as far as I can remember, I always had this really small hiking backpack, and we'd go for really, really small trips, you know, tailored to a child, and on after school, on weekends. And then it just got bigger and bigger, and you kind of wake up one day where, you know, being outdoors is where you're comfortable. It's what you're thinking about. That's what you want to push. You want to see more, do a little bit more. And so I think I got it from my mom mostly. Yeah.
So what did your mom think when you when you finished your last semester of school in France and then spent 7 years traveling. I mean, that's a long time. You know, we hear a lot on this show, people, you know, they might spend a whole lifetime doing something like this, or they might spend, you know, a few months. And there's plenty of stories that can happen in just a few weeks, even that's plenty of information to talk on this show about. But for you, what was the idea? What were you setting out to do when you got out of school?
Yeah, I didn't have a clear plan, to be honest. I went to do, like you said, my last semester in the south of France, and I thought I'd finish my bachelor degree and maybe travel a few months, had some savings, you know, see the world, travel by yourself. That's always an exciting idea. But I thought I'd come back to do a master's the year after that. But then I started traveling, started doing everything, hiking, rock climbing, and I just loved it so much. It was just such a big change and such a passion every day after day. There was always something amazing to do. If there was not, I could just hitchhike somewhere where I could hike more or climb. It just went like that, month after month and year after year, actually. So I didn't tell anyone that I would be going to travel for years or even 7 years, because I didn't know. That wasn't the plan at all at first. I thought a few months. So my parents eventually, I mean, they were happy for me, but they had to adapt. I mean, if they wanted to see me, they basically took their holidays wherever I was in the world. So my dad in Italy and in China, so my mom in Nepal, in Hawaii.
Were they happy to come visit?
Yeah, I mean, they were really happy. I didn't, we say the apple didn't fall far from the tree. that they were really happy to have new places to visit every year. I think sometimes the logistics of it was a bit more complicated depending on where I was. But yeah, I think it was just a great opportunity to see some new countries, new cultures, and then to travel together again. That was amazing. Yeah.
So what were some of the things you were doing while you were going out? What were some of the things you were trying to either achieve or some of the experiences you were trying to have while you were traveling?
Well, I'm a very curious person. I really like to try new things, some things I'm not comfortable with, or some things I ignore everything about. So I would always kind of push myself to try something new. A few examples of that would be, I got to China, and after a year of traveling, got from France to China overland, and I needed some money if I wanted to keep traveling, right? So my account was near empty. And I realized I could probably work in China and teach English, although I'm not a teacher and English is not my first language. But I had no idea if I could do it or if I would enjoy it at all. So decided to give it a shot, told myself, all right, I'm gonna try to last 3 months. If I can do 3 months, I'll be happy with myself. And I actually ended up loving it, ended up being a fairly good teacher, I think I could say, and stayed there for a year until I had enough savings to keep on traveling. So I always tried wherever I went to do some new things. In the Philippines, took a month, rented a little room on the beach and a surfboard and learned how to surf. In Thailand, took a 1 month intensive traditional Thai massage course to get a certification in there. I always tried to do stuff like that and mixed it up with outdoor stuff. So lots of hiking, ended up doing more and more through hikes as the time and years went by. I really realized that was something I was really into, really enjoyed it. I discovered it while traveling in Turkey. Did my first through hike there, well, quite a long hike in the south of Turkey. And I just fell in love with the idea with the feeling of hiking alone and just crossing such a vast distance in a country. So there was a lot of different things I would do depending on where I was, what I could do there, depending on the country and the culture. But I always tried to bring some outdoor sports or activities in there.
So what do you think about trekking and backpacking drew you in versus some of the other things that you were doing?
I really got to enjoy slow travel. I traveled with a few people, and you probably have as well, that have FOMO, fear of missing out. And sometimes I think I had it at first a little bit, but at some point I just got to accept that there's too many things to see, there's too many things to do, and I might as well just take the time to enjoy whatever I have here, wherever I am. And hiking is such a good way of focusing on that. I mean, you can't go faster than what your body allows you, and it gets you to go actually quite slowly through a country or a region, that you can meet the locals, you can talk with them, you can get invited to stay at their place, or at least to eat with them, which abroad actually happens quite a lot. So there's this cultural part of the slow travel that I really, really enjoyed. And when I did the Lycian Way in the south of Turkey, which is about roughly 500 kilometers hike, it's a historical region of Turkey. So there's a lot of ruins, there's a lot of history there, a lot of great culture, but also the landscapes are fantastic. And there's not a lot of hikers. There's really not a lot. I think in the few weeks it took me, I might have met a handful at best. So you're alone a lot of the time. And I really, really enjoy that, how you, the solitude of it, how you can't share it with anyone, how you basically kind of condemned to enjoy it and take all of it. You're just yourself with the wilderness. There's no distraction. There's no one to talk to. There's nothing else to do, really. And it really gets you in the present moment. So I think that's when I really fell in love with the way of traveling.
That you know, I'm a huge fan of that as well. To be able to really experience a place. I like the pace of cycling. I'm not very fast cyclist, so, you know, I'm not going too fast anyway, but walking, hiking itself is even slower and even more in tune with nature and in tune with, there's less friction between you and locals. And that is, I'm sure that is just the most incredible way to experience a place, is literally physically walking through it. And with all your travels and with all the experiences you've had all over the world, you mentioned this through hike in Georgia being one of the most impactful, if not the most impactful. Can you tell us about where that idea came from, this self-made through hike through the country of Georgia? What were some of the experiences? What was it like? And why do you think it was so impactful to you?
Yeah, that was, like you said, a self-made through hike at first.
So you didn't follow a trail?
No, not at all. Well, there were very few trails at the beginning for the few, I don't know, maybe 3 days. So basically it started after that hike in Turkey, the first time I did it. I then traveled on to Georgia, and I had a month to spend there before I had a Trans-Siberian ticket in Russia. So I had a month to spend in Georgia. I ended up working in a small guest house in the capital. And the owner was a Polish guy. And he kept telling me about the north of the country, the Caucasus mountain range on the border with Russia. And he showed me pictures and photos of the mountains. It was like nothing I'd seen before, really, like massive 5,000 meter mountains, but not a lot of trees, just a lot of green grass and flowers, and then all of a sudden glaciers on it. It was quite something. It really stuck with me. So at the end, I decided to go hike just a few days before I had to cross into Russia. And I fell in love with the landscapes. It was just so amazing, hiking all day on all those ridges and passing the summits with really like no tourists really at that time. So I really, really had a great experience at first. And Georgia is an amazing country. The people are just so generous. They don't receive a lot of Westerners yet as tourists. And they're kind of bridging Europe and Asia. So it's a very interesting mix culturally. The food is amazing. It's the birthplace of wine. We often think it might be France or Italy, but it's actually Georgia. So everyone, every little shop has a plastic bottle of homemade wine behind a counter somewhere. And as soon as they see you, they just take it out, give you a glass. So the hospitality is incredible. So all of that together, I had to leave to go to Russia, but I thought to myself, I want to go back to Georgia. There's so much hiking to do. The mountains are just pristine. I want to see the mountains, and I want to see all of them. That was really the idea I had in mind. I want to see all of it. I won't be satisfied with just another 3 or 4 days hike. So I ended up traveling to China, staying there for a year, traveling down to Asia, for about another year, then working in Australia for several months. I just had to decide where I wanted to go next to travel from Australia. I had a girlfriend at that point, and we decided, well, let's give a shot at going to Georgia. She had never been to Georgia, and I had been thinking about it more and more. And one idea that came to my mind, a bit crazy at the time, was like, well, if I want to see all of it, why not walk the whole country?
Wow.
So we decided we'd do a test first, because we had never been together in person, my girlfriend and I. So we met in Istanbul in Turkey, and we went to do that Lisan Way hike in the south of Turkey, 500 kilometers. So that was kind of the test or the warm-up. And after that, we traveled to Georgia, went to the capital, bought some maps. But, you know, Georgia is an ex-Soviet country, so it doesn't have all the infrastructure in outside the capital as other European countries can have. And the maps is a very good example of that. There's almost no map, especially no hiking map of the whole country, or only a couple tiny regions. So we had to kind of piece it all together, decide with Google Maps and all the research we could do, where would we go? There was no hike for that, like you said, there's no trail for that. So we took about 2 weeks in the capital, got an itinerary built up, and then we headed out for the north, got to the Russian border, and started hiking from there. One thing that was interesting is that Georgia is a fairly small country and also only has about 3.5 million people. So the cities that we see on the map are actually quite small, except for the capital. So we had planned our trail or hike to go around the cities, because we wanted only to go through small villages, right? We didn't want to go to be stuck in big cities. We wanted to see the backcountry and the wilderness and the locals, where no one goes really. But after maybe a week or 2 weeks, we realized that the biggest cities we had on our itinerary were tiny villages with absolutely nothing. It was just like two dirt roads with no shops, with no way of, you know, having a shower, buying more food, doing nothing. It was just farms in the hills and the mountains. So we had to change completely everything. So we could go through what we thought at first were some big cities, but I think the biggest we went through was maybe 18,000 people. That was a big one. So it was quite an adventure to have to deal with the logistics of it. Same thing with the food, because going out in the kind of off the beaten track, if you want, there's not a lot of tourists go there, and especially not a lot of hikers. Many places we stayed had never seen Canadians in their life. The food was a big thing for us. We had to hike in sections of 2, 3, 4 days of autonomy and then resupply the food somewhere. But then we realized if there's no tourists, if it's not as developed or populated, then there's no supermarket, there's no market, there's no convenience store. So we got to like the biggest cities we could. And when we were lucky, there was like one small restaurant. We'd go inside and then order a whole chicken and just take it apart ourselves, pack it in a Tupperware. We bought eggs and asked the restaurants to boil them for us. We ordered a homemade pizza, cut it into pieces to pack it in our bags. So that's how we had to find solutions for all the logistics of being, of kind of creating a hike.
You know, I love to hear that it was hospitable or there was so much hospitality because, you know, the state of Georgia is known for that as well, Southern hospitality. And so maybe it's something with the name, Georgia,
you know,
just being hospitable. It sounds like it was so impactful because it felt almost like you had discovered it in a way compared to maybe some other places you had been around the world that were, I don't know, maybe had more of an idea of what to expect. I always find the places I enjoy the most in the long run and I have the most fond memories are places I didn't go into it thinking, knowing what it was going to be or having these notions of what I think it's going to be and kind of being surprised by how wonderful it is. It seems like that might have happened with you with Georgia too.
Yeah, I think you're right. It probably happened to you as well, like you're saying on some trips where you kind of have an idea of some of the places you're going to go, but then you get surprised by other places you hadn't really thought about or were not that much on your radar. And well, when I went to Georgia the first time, that's exactly what happened. I had absolutely no expectations for Georgia, and it was just a big wow, this place has it all for me. So going back was kind of trying to see, all right, I spent a month there, but only hiked less than a week, and I was just blown away by the country, the hospitality, and the scenery. So let's see what else it has to offer. And really, it didn't disappoint. It was actually, I think, much more than I could have expected. There was so many moments where we'd just be hiking on some dirt road and a big old Russian truck would stop next to us. And people don't really speak English. Maybe some of the younger people in the capital, but apart from that, the second language for everyone is Russian. So people would just stop like that, open the truck door, hand us some fresh fruits, just smile, wave their hands, and they wouldn't wait to try to talk to us. They didn't expect anything. They would just see us and realize clearly we're not from around there. And they were just being nice, being generous and hospitable. We got waken up in the middle of the night because we were camping in a big field, and a guy just drove by on a dirt road, a few hundred meters. I still don't know how he saw us. Maybe he'd seen us when the sun was still up, and he thought, "I'll come back if they're still." if they still decide to sleep there. And he drove all the way in the field to our tent, woke us up around midnight, and he had no English, but he was basically trying to tell us, I have a place, I have a family, and you know, you can stay with me, you don't have to sleep outside, you just come to my home. And we had to make him understand, like, this is what we like, this is what we do, like, this is a really nice offer.
Oh, wow.
Like, the hospitality was always like that, always kind of happening to us. You don't have to ask for anything. People are just generally being really nice and welcoming. I really, really enjoy that.
Let's take a quick message break and hear from the folks that help make this show possible. That is plenty of that for now. Let's get back into the episode. Sounds wonderful, honestly. And you're right, Georgia has everything. It has the ocean. It has enormous mountains, some of the biggest in Europe. And it's small enough to be able to hike across in a relatively short amount of time. So tell us about the experience. You were piecing together roads and trails and making your own way, trying to find towns with enough services to resupply. Tell us about what it was like. What were some of the highs of the experience?
Yeah, so the northern part of the country is the Caucasus mountain range. So the border with Russia passes along those mountains. So that's a really, really beautiful region. And it's a little bit easier to hike because many places around there actually have hiking trails. So we pieced together a few of them to start from a glacier and then head down. And then we had to decide which way we would go if we headed straight down to Armenia. And when we decided to change our itinerary, that was a big part of it, because we had to cross some mountainous regions and actually head or aim at a city, because we realize we will need some food at some point. So we will find a direction where we will get to a city at some point. And then there's a lot of history in Georgia as well. So we tried to go through a few villages or towns where we could take advantage of that and see some stuff, like the city, like how do you say, where they made a wine. There's a famous city in the north where they made Stalin's favorite wine. So there's a lot of little interesting places like this we wanted to go. And then there's a fairly famous national park more in the middle, closer to Armenia, that we wanted to go through. There's quite wild as well. So we always kind of got together everything we had, because nothing was complete. Google Maps, Maps.me, all different apps, the maps, paper maps we found, and tried to make sense of what was possible to do, because we several times ended up just following a little, what looks like a forest trail or hiking trail or dirt road in the mountains, and then there was nothing. You just end up in the wilderness. It kind of stops there and you have no idea where to go from there. So that was always a little bit of a challenge. But many times you just meet someone. I remember one time we ended up in exactly that situation. We're in the mountains. We're following kind of a dirt track, and it ends on the side of a really steep, not a cliff, but a really steep side of a mountain. We realize we can't go down there. That's the end of the trail. But there's a fence and there seems to be a house behind the trees. And there's this man that comes to see us. He has this white fence with a white gate. And he tries to explain something to us, but we can't understand. He doesn't speak English at all. So he goes back into his house and comes back with a big black permanent marker. And on his white gate starts drawing a map of the whole region. with all the roads and tracks. And basically to have us understand that's where you are, this is my house, and that is actually not where you want to be. You want to go back this way and tell us everything without any concern for his white gate. So yeah, he ended up inviting us into his backyard, serving us lunch, all lots of homemade food with a homemade honey because he was a beekeeper, and homemade jam and bread and cheese. His mom came out, and he wouldn't speak English. He didn't speak English. We had a little translation, like using Google Translate for Georgian to English or Russian to English. And he just fed us homemade wine as usual, and then gave us 1 liter of his best honey for us in a glass bottle, which is always fantastic when you're hiking. But
a whole liter, yeah. Too. That's a lot of honey.
Yeah, it is a lot. It lasted quite a while. That was kind of what happened on a daily basis. You couldn't exactly know where you're going to end up because the trail you're following might just end randomly. You might end up completely lost. You might meet some people, and then they offer you they would invite the whole family in the backyard and get some alcohol out, and then it's a big event each time. So we took about 29 days of walking, 55 days total to cross the country, because we wanted to have a lot of rest to, you know, see the places. We didn't want to just go through without seeing anything. But yeah, so about a month of pure walking. But it was a bit of a guess. I mean, each day, what is going to happen? Where are we going to go? We didn't have good maps. We didn't have internet reception, cell phone reception most of the time. So it was an adventure, really, to go through like that.
What would you say was most surprising that you learned about Georgia or experienced on the hike itself?
I think what surprised me the most is how little it is visited. I think it is getting more known from the public now, because it has so much to offer. And another thing which kind of goes together is the food tradition, the cuisine, the Georgian cuisine is absolutely amazing. There's a lot of kind of Russian influence, but also a lot of Middle East influence and Europe. It's a really good intersection between all the cultures around, which are all very different from each other. And you get fantastic dishes. And as soon as you're invited somewhere, as soon as you go eat some local food, you get really surprised, because that is at the same time so different from what we know. I mean, in Canada, we'll have a lot of different Asian restaurants and European restaurants and some Middle East, but nothing like that, really. So that was really surprising to me. I mean, even the wine is very different. It's extremely old tradition, about 8,000 years old, I think. But it's very different. So it's fermented underground in clay urns. So the taste of it is quite different. There's a lot of cloudy wine, sweet red wine as well. So that's something I definitely did not expect from Georgia. But I mean, for me, who loves to eat, I have a big appetite. And I mean, if I have a good meal that can absolutely make my day, that is really, really good country to travel to.
Sounds like you want to go back too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as I said before, the idea was to see all of it. Well, that's impossible. So there's still a lot to see. There's still a lot of regions to see. And you know, when you travel slowly, as I am 100% sure you've experienced several times, you meet people and then you make friends. And that's amazing, because then you can stay in touch, you can go back, you have friends in many different places in the world. And then they can tell you about their country or where they live. They can tell you about the good places, and they can take you to see some places more off the beaten track. So that's kind of what happens now, knowing a few people in Georgia, have kind of a, I want to say, special relationship with the with the country, where it's almost, I would like it to be a second home. I'd be happy to go back multiple times. There's just so much to do, so much unexplored in the country. Yeah, it's a really good place, and it also gives you an idea, I think, of the region, because all the countries around are not the most visited as well. So the south of Russia, or Azerbaijan, Armenia, they all really share this hospitality tradition, from my experience at least.
Has it made you, with all your experiences, it made you say, what other places might I be either overlooking in my research, or where I want to go, or need to see again in this way? I'm sure there is a huge list. Like you said, you can drive yourself crazy by all the places you are not right now and you haven't been before. So does it interest you to check out another place that might be similar?
Oh, absolutely. You're 100% right. Yeah. That actually might be the one thing that will kind of hold me back from going back to Georgia sooner than I will, because there's so many places to see, and this experience of through hiking on a self-made hike showed me that it is actually possible. It's not easy. It really isn't easy, and you probably cannot do that everywhere. It has to be someplace with that kind of terrain or culture. But there's so many places I would like to do that, not necessarily cross a whole country, but if we talk about Central Asia, so Kyrgyzstan, I've been, but for just a really short time, that's definitely somewhere I would like to try something of the sort. Siberia, Iran, Kashmir, Kazakhstan, Romania. It really got me to think about traveling and the countries where I would go in a different way, trying to see if there were some countries, or mostly some regions in the countries, that I could cross or that I could walk through, not necessarily to just, check something on the list, not to say I've crossed Romania on foot, but maybe some mountain range, or in Morocco, can be really interesting to use hiking to see all of it, but also to meet the people that live in the smaller places and that don't have, that don't meet tourists and travelers as often as, the big cities and the more touristic places. So, yeah, I think I'm really drawn to Siberia quite a bit. But you were talking about cycling, and I know you've done some pretty amazing cycling trips. I agree that it's kind of the same idea. You can do this slow travel and see a place and meet its people while cycling. So that's also, I also have a few ideas like that to cycle. Maybe some countries it would be easier to do it like that.
It makes carrying a liter of honey in a glass jar a little easier. That's for sure. And you get to enjoy the downhills a little bit more, but I love it. Yeah. I love it, because it's almost like you're riding a horse, in the sense of It's like riding a horse in the sense of what you can carry, but you also get to stay in shape like you do with you when you walk it.
Yeah.
But it's a good mix. But and if you don't have the time to spend, it's a great way to still be out in the open experiencing all the weather, all the smells, all the people. It's never too, you're never going too quick where you can't chat with somebody.
Yeah.
But, well, I tell you what, now you've been stuck in Montreal, having to wait for COVID to kind of see what's going to happen and let the world open back in. What are you itching to do now? What is on your radar?
Well, that's such a tough question. I mean, I have this kind of list of places I want to go, of things I want to do. I had some, before COVID hit, my girlfriend and I, we were guiding in India. We had about a year and a half, well, yeah, a bit more than a year of traveling planned, going through several places, hiking, like name some of them, like Morocco and Romania, Nepal. I've been to Nepal, but there's so much to do in the remote regions as well. So all these plans that are kind of on standby for now, just waiting to see what's going to happen. But, you know, as someone who likes adventures, I'm sure you experience the same thing. If you sit back for too long, just waiting, you kind of start making new plans and more and just thinking about it. So my list is just getting longer and longer. And when we can start traveling again, I don't know how I'm going to choose from all the places I want to go. I learned about a hike in the Balkans from around Greece to the border of Italy and Croatia, something like that. So that's another 1,300 kilometers hike that was just added to the list. There's a lot. There really is a lot of hikes and trips that I want to do. So to be honest, I don't know how I'm going to choose. I'm not there yet, so I don't have to. But it's going to be a tough decision.
It's frustrating how much there is to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the world is such a big place. And as you were talking about earlier, sometimes you travel to places you have some highlights in mind. There's some places you really want to do, you really want to go. You have some dreams. I had the dream of going to Turkey, but didn't realize I would be even more amazed by the country just next to it, Georgia. I had a dream of going to Mongolia, but had no expectations whatsoever for China, but really China just blew my mind. It's a fantastic place, mostly because, well, it's such a rich culture and I didn't know anything about it. I mean, we know very little, although we hear a lot about it. It's mostly politics, really. So I was amazed by this place. And the more you do that, the more you look at a map and you're like, you know what? I've never heard about this tiny place or this region or, you know, this country. Even Mexico is a good example. I mean, for Canadians, you hear about Mexico, I mean, economically and politically, but not a lot of people know that in the middle and the south of Mexico, there's some really high regions in the mountains where the forests resemble the Canadian forests a lot. So the world is full of places that can kind of surprise you, but you don't expect it. So I'm kind of looking for those places now.
I'll just share a quick story. I don't do this much, but we did a with the company I work for, we did a cross-country bike ride from around New York City to San Diego last summer. And I was driving the support vehicle the whole time. It was a company trip. So we had, you know, to photography and marketing and stuff to do. And people asked me, what was the best part of the trip or what was your favorite state to go through? And I don't know, you know, how much of the states and the culture around them you know about, but I tell people that my most enjoyable state that I enjoyed the most was Ohio. And it's completely flat. It's farmland. You know, it's like going across, you know, somewhere in the middle of Canada, just, you know, uneventful in most ways. It isn't the West. You know, it isn't like the Canadian Rockies or the American Rockies and all the glory of that and the beauty of the animals. It was, I had no expectations of Ohio because I had never been there before. And it was awesome. The people were incredible, generous. The experience, that the weather was just amazing. And it was probably just hitting it at the right time and the right combination of things happened to where I look back on it so fondly. And I say, you know, that the pace of life there, the people that we saw, it might go back through again one day and it might not be the same experience. But for this experience, that was the most enjoyable aspect. And Ohio is by no means a destination to go most of the time.
It's not known as the best tourist destination when we go to the States. Yeah, I agree. It's small moments or places like this that you just don't expect and can really, really surprise you. Sometimes it's just a few moments that will make the trip.
Exactly.
Those are the times you remember.
Absolutely. Yeah.
In the south of Turkey, the first time I did the hike, there was also a time like this a little bit. There was a section of the hike. There was just hills. I had to hike, I don't know, 2-3 days before meeting the next village, and then another maybe 1 or 2 days. So I had planned to resupply there, but it didn't seem to me to be any, you know, historical ruins or mountains or nothing really, just hills and fields. So I set out on that section hiking, and I end up at the small village where I had to resupply and realize it's just two dirt roads crossing, a few, maybe a dozen houses, hills and fields, and one mosque in the middle and nothing else. So I'm kind of puzzled. What am I going to do? Like, what is this place? I was getting a bit discouraged because it was really hot. I was hungry. I was thirsty. Had almost no water left, and I had to buy some food. But clearly, I couldn't find any. There was no store whatsoever. So I thought, this is bad, and I was really not in the right mindset, I think, at that moment. But then I met a guy walking on the road, and I tried to ask him with my very basic Turkish if there's any place, any way I could buy some food. And he says, no, there's nothing here. And I'm trying to explain to him all the way where I'm going on the next day, where I'm walking to. I have to get some food if I want to make it, if I want to eat tonight, basically. So he just asked me to follow him. He brings me to a house, and behind the house, there's about, I don't know, 15 men sitting outside on plastic chairs, and a big table full of fresh food in the middle. And they all look to be in their 50s or older. They're all sitting there chatting in Turkish. I don't understand much, but the one man who seems to be the owner of the house just brings me a chair next to the table and just gestures me to eat whatever you want, eat as much as you want. So I'm really happy. I'm blown away by the hospitality once again. I'm like, wow, this is amazing. I don't know you. You don't know me. We've just met. You don't even know my name. We don't even speak the same language, but you're just feeding me at your table. So I just start eating. And then he tries to kind of translate a few questions, a few comments, a few things about the place and ask me. So all the men, they start to, you know, be interested in what's happening. Who's this young guy there? Where's he coming from? Just getting out the mountains like that with a backpack. So he's trying to translate to them the answers that I'm giving on my trip. And I try to get to understand what's happening here, where I can't get my question across really. And about half an hour later, I ate, well, quite a bit. There was lots of food. So I tried to ask again, so why? And then I gesture, like I kind of show everyone in the circle why everyone here, now, today. And he looks at me and he's like, my father, and then he puts his hands together next to his head, like resting on it, and he says, kaput. So then I understand that I'm basically crashing his father's funeral. And they didn't think about it. They didn't care. They just invited me. They just fed me. They were just curious and really interested. And then so we start, you know, talking about that, about his dad, well, trying to. And then the imam arrived and we just all sat together, did a little prayer. And when I had to go, they just filled my backpack with so much food, so much food. I actually had to give some to a couple homeless people that I met the next day because there was just too much for me to carry. So that was such an unexpected moment. That was just a time where I was kind of down and discouraged by the task or where I was, what I had to do. And, you know, sometimes it just in a very short moment, everything turns around and it makes a whole day, the whole trip.
It makes it worth it.
Yeah.
That's a wonderful story. Being able to just show up at someone's funeral without knowing it, the hospitality, the generosity, that's what life's about. That is awesome. And for folks, if you've never experienced anything like that, I believe you'd agree, like, please get out there, put yourself out there to experience how good humanity is to one another. When you're out on an adventure, sometimes that's the only medium that we can be out in to experience these things. I know I've experienced it countless times, and it completely changes your view on the world. Most people are this way, and you got to put yourself out there to experience it. Turn off the TV, get out there. If you're not already doing this yourself.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And hiking and cycling is, they're just such a good way to do it. You know, you just show up or pass by and everyone is just interested and curious. It's such a great way of meeting people and seeing the world. Yeah.
And if you can't do that right now, guess what? You can be the person doing the feeding, being hospitable. That's the state of life I'm in right now. So I need to find more opportunities to be that person for folks. Was there anything else you wanted to share? Any updates on what you're doing to pursue an outdoor career?
Well, I'm studying to be, I'm basically training to be mountain guide or, you know, outdoors guide at the moment. So I really don't have a plan for the moment because of the situation. You know, COVID is, it's pretty tough to know what future is going to bring for us here. I'm just focusing on next summer at the moment. And we'll see after that. There's so many possibilities once the world is open again to traveling. So I'll take it at that point.
Well, Alexander, this has been an awesome chat. You make me want to go to Georgia, the country that is. Georgia, the state, that's pretty cool. It's the beginning of the Appalachian Trail, which is nice. But I'd like to go to this country. It sounds incredible.
It is. I'm sure the state is great as well. I've never been, but I've had my eyes set on the Appalachian Trail for a few years now. So I hope I'll be able to go as well. Yeah.
Well, I don't think the mountains are nearly as big, but it is a cool experience. It definitely is a cool experience. But well, Alexander, thank you. I'm going to go now, but I appreciate you reaching out and appreciate you coming on the show. This was an awesome talk. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Mason.
First of all, thank you so much for listening. It means the world to us that you choose to listen to this show. If you'd like to help us further, you can leave a review on iTunes, share us with your friends, your family. It goes a long way to grow in the show. You can also support us financially through patreon.com/adventuresportspodcast. Link is in the show notes. And also, if you have an idea of who could be a good guest for the show, we're always looking for people to tell their story about the outdoors or adventure. So if you know someone, please reach out. Email us at info@adventuresportspodcast.com. And until then, get out there and have some fun.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.